my spiritual path is based off my heart,
yeah,
and my connection with the people that have inspired me. It's an intimate connection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to think of the spirit as like an old bearded man up in the sky,
on
like
a throne,
damning
right.
all of us. You know, they just call it the innermost self,
yeah,
right? Closer than our own breath.
I believe that each and every one of us has the power within ourselves to create the life that we really want. And I want to help give you the tools to make that happen. I'm Danica Patrick, and I'm pretty intense. Welcome to the Pretty Intense Podcast. Today on the show, we have my absolute favorite artist, Trevor Hall. My friend Stacy turned me on to his music years ago, and I remember when she asked for it to be put on, and I was listening to probably country or something like that, and she was like, "Do you mind if I put some of my music on?" I was like, okay, because I'm a little protective of the music, and she put it on, and I never turned it off. And Trevor is a fantastic artist. He has a lot of heart, a lot of soul. He writes it all himself. Has a really cool story. I mean, like, look, his dad is a tennis pro that sells real estate. And when the first time I met him, he had a polo on tucked into his jeans with a belt. Like, he is like a classic all-American kind of looking guy. And then there's Trevor, who's, you know, tattoos and, you know, definitely much more laid back kind of hippie vibe. And he's an artist and he's singing about spirituality. And look, I want to know how the hell that guy turns into that guy. Like, how did that happen in his family? So we talked about that. We talked about travel. We talked about how music impacts him. And we talked about personal growth and how we can expand as human beings into a space that's not only better for others, but ultimately better for ourselves. So please enjoy. Yeah, we were talking about when you first got here, you know, we kind of dipped into like, I said, how's your parents? You were talking about your dad.
And,
like, I just think it was so fun that first time I met you. The Cubs win the World Series.
That was one of the best nights because we like never hang out after a show.
Okay.
I'm like,
because you get on the road and go? Or?
Yeah, or just like, I'm kind of an introvert in that sense. Or I like to save my energy.
Yeah,
so
I get it.
It was just like the whole, all the elements came together. My dad was there, you know, who's an extrovert, you know. You were there. My wife was there. And then it was the World Series, and we were in that cool little place.
Oh, yeah.
So it wasn't, like, too wild.
And we, like, watched it in, like, it was, like, a Mexican kind of restaurant adjoined to the little venue in Asheville, North Carolina.
Eagle. Yeah.
Where it was, like, it was really late, and there was a rain delay for the World Series, and we all hung out
watching. Oh, my God, there was a rain delay.
Yeah, there was a rain delay. So we were there, like, all night.
Yeah.
And then we drove back to Charlotte. From there, from Asheville.
Because you guys came in a car.
Yeah, exactly. We came in and out. Two other girls came with me.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, and when I remember thinking.
So you must have got home late.
Oh, yeah. It's all good. It was so fun.
No, it was a super fun night.
Like, you're my favorite by completely. Alanis Morissette is gone. It's you now. I still love Alanis.
No more Jagged Little Pill?
No, I still love Jagged Little Pill. But, you know, I just really love your music. And, you know, that night, I mean, I'd love I kind of want to talk about the resonance of it and the, like what makes you connect with the music. But first and foremost, like it's super spiritual and it's very deep. And you've traveled to India and you have a story that is not common.
Right.
But then your dad is there in his polo tucked into his jeans with a belt. And I'm like, wait a second, this doesn't fit. Not that it has to, but I was totally judging the book by the cover.
Right.
And
right.
So you grew up in North Carolina.
South Carolina.
So tell me about like where you grew up and just like how the hell you came to this place where you arrive in India and you're like at ashrams.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the trippy. Even for me, it's the trippiest journey. Like when I look back, I'm like, how did that happen? Because I grew up in Hilton Head, which is really resorty.
Yeah.
Golf, tennis, like just like vacation spot, you know, and like super small to grow up. It's like, I think the island's like 12 miles long or something. It's like just a really quiet, you know. Mm-hmm. My dad, he first went down there in like the 70s when he was like a hippie or whatever.
Okay, and so he's the hippie threat.
Well, he was definitely like, you know, music man. You know, that's where I got all my music vibes, I guess. But he went down there when there was nothing there, when there was just like one traffic light and it was just a special place for him. But eventually, long story short.
We have all day.
Yeah.
Until you have to leave, but
they
podcast, we can go long.
Right. They moved down there when I was 3. And
so where were you born then?
I was born in Greenwich.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I don't really remember too much of that because I was so young. But yeah, we moved down there. My dad was a tennis pro and he was really good friends with Stan Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan Smith was starting his academy down there. And so he asked my dad to come down there and help him run it, be the pro and stuff. So my dad first went down there for that. And then once, you know, he kind of retired from tennis because of his body, he got into real estate. And that's what I think brought him down there originally. I hope I got that whole story right. But
don't worry. I got the entire story wrong about how I started in racing.
Oh, God.
I interviewed my dad and I was like, so I have my own story and I've told it for 20 years. But you tell me how we started in racing. I was like, Dad, my story is so much better. I'm so disappointed you just told me that.
But yours was.
I was but the Pontumbo, Dad.
Oh, I had it all wrong.
I had the whole story wrong. And I'm like, oh, geez.
Well,
so
I feel bad because I feel like I just got the right story. We were just down there. My wife and I were just down there hanging out with him. And we went through this all again. So I think I'm on the right track. But
I have sympathy for the situation.
Yeah, I grew up there and, you know, it was really small, and I grew up like going to a prep school.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I know you said tennis, like, real,
yeah, like realtor, shirt, prep tie, school. Like collared shirt, like, you know, khaki pants, the whole thing. Had to have your shirt tucked in, all that stuff. And there was just kind of like a system. You know, it was like you do this, you go to high school, you apply to college, generally in the Southeast, and that's your
be the robot.
That's your life, you know. Mm-hmm. Which is great. It's a good path for people. But for me, being so like hungry for something else, I felt really like stifled and what, suffocated.
What was there a certain moment where you realized like, mm-hmm. I'm different. Like I'm seeking something that I'm not getting here.
Right. I don't know if there was like, I think I just always kind of felt different in a way. It was weird. I mean I played the game, you know.
Sure.
I did you know what we all did, you know, played sports and everything, but I got really into surfing and I got really into like surf culture and music and that kind of became this outlet because, you know, surfing is a very like worldwide kind of sport, you know, like surfers go all over the world, and surfing kind of became this like window for me to look through into like other ways of living, you know, and
by visiting other cultures
or just like watching by visiting other cultures, but like watching these films like where they're filmed in like whatever Indonesia and stuff, I'm like, oh, there's other ways to do this life, you know. So that I think that's what kind of got me kind of going a little bit, and then surfing became my outlet, my connection with nature, spirit, you know, whatever it was. It was just my way of, I don't know, getting out of that scene, I guess, in South Carolina. So, that was kind of how I think I started to feel like, is it wrong for me to not want to take this path that like everybody else is taking? You know,
was that hard?
Yeah, absolutely. Just like, you know, even though I had so much support, I mean, I had 100% support from my parents.
Which when people are faced with something that's, they're afraid to show everyone, sometimes the hardest person to show is your family.
Yeah.
Because they're so close and there's certain, it's almost like the closer the relationship, sometimes the more difficult conversations can be.
Yeah.
But they were supportive.
I was blessed. I mean, You know, my dad was a musician, so yeah. I think he knew and understood the joy of music mm-hmm. and what it gave mm-hmm. you internally, that mm-hmm. feeling that you can't mm-hmm. really put into words. And I think that he perhaps saw that in his son, you know, and understood the value of that feeling and wanted to do anything in his power to serve mm-hmm. that vision for me. You know, he saw that.
So you told him you wanted to be in music. Is that kind of like the sort of position you took on life, is like, look, this is what I love. I don't really want to go to college. Or was that the difficult thing, or was that even a scenario?
No, that came later. Yeah. I mean, when I was living in South Carolina, my dad and mom did everything they could to make sure that I had full access to my dream, you know. I remember there was like a music store in Savannah, which was the closest city, mm-hmm. and my mom would take me there every other week to rent an instrument, because I could never decide what instrument I wanted to play.
So you just learned how to play all of them?
No, I didn't. But I was like, one week, I remember I was like, oh, I want to play the trombone, and then my mom would drive me out there, but
I played the flute in school.
I tried the flute too.
And I kind of rebelled against it. I love music, and I would call myself artistic. I'm definitely not a math brain. And then I didn't really want to play anymore, but she had told me, why? You have to play. I bought your flute. Right. I bought it, and so I stopped renting it. And I'm like, well, okay. So I played my flute all the way in through eighth grade, sixth, seventh, eighth grade.
I forget when I played the flute. I was into the flute too. It was like orchestra.
You can always tell when someone's played the flute because they go like this when they mimic it. And if they've never played the flute, they go like this.
Right. Yeah. That's definitely how
you know it goes like this, but right? People that don't know go like this. Yeah.
I play all sorts of things. Yeah. I mean, flute, trombone.
Which one did you, you love the guitar, I'm going to guess?
Well, I got into, you know, I got into songwriting, you know, I wanted to express myself, and guitar just kind of seemed like a natural choice.
Yeah.
And I taught myself, you know, on the computer with like learning, you know, like different songs that I liked, you know, different bands. You know, I could go online and look up, they had this thing called tablature, which was kind of like an easy way to read music. And when I taught myself that, that's how I learned the guitar. But then I started getting into songwriting, and that's when I kind of stuck with guitar.
With songwriting?
Because you can't really, you know, write lyrics while you're playing the trombone flute, you know?
So. And, you know, it just doesn't really transcend through the culture.
Yeah, I don't know if that's ever been done before.
Okay, yeah. But I love the guitar. You stick with that.
Yeah.
So was songwriting? I mean, songwriting to me, it's a lot like poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, did they feel similar to you? Like, there's some things like, you know, you have dabbled in poetry, right?
Right.
Some of that. So,
yeah, I think.
Did you also write poems, or was it just about writing songs?
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, anything to get my emotions to come forth, you mm-hmm. know, to not hold them in, you know. Music just helped kind of bring it out, I think, easier for me, you know. But you know, songs are poems, you know, poems are songs too, you know, like even in like ancient India and all this stuff, all the famous poets, you know, all their poems were sung. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. You know, it kind of goes hand in hand, but the lyrics were very important for me. The lyrics were a way for me to kind of be able to write about or go to any place I wanted. I could create my own world, right, in a song.
Did any of the songs feel too private to share after you had written them, because they were so...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even now, like, some songs I'll write and I haven't played them for anybody except my wife,
and
perhaps.
Today, we're going to do that, right? I mean, some of them today.
Yeah, the songs I wrote specifically for this podcast. No, but there's something that happens when you release it to people.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. Even just getting your feelings, like you said, taking the emotion and getting it through you.
Right.
You know, I feel that I can feel emotions in a physical way that I need to either write it down and get, it's like getting it out somehow.
Right.
It's like, and it doesn't make tangible sense in your mind, but the feelings have an energy.
Right.
And it's about pulling that out, whether it's pulling it onto paper and writing it Absolutely. Down and getting it out. Or for me, sometimes it's talking to someone and getting it out. And that can be like, you know, kind of my church, my, you know, having the conversation. Or sometimes it comes in good old fashioned convulsions of crying.
Yeah.
But it's literally that energy flowing through.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same?
Of course. I mean, it's my wife and I, we always talk about moving our water, you know, because, you know, if a river, you know, a river that's constantly moving, you know, no impurities can kind of stick to it, right?
Yeah,
but when it becomes
true.
Still and stagnant.
That's why they put fountains in ponds so that it keeps it clean
yeah,
and keeps it moving.
Exactly. So anything to move, you know, all emotion is energy. Everything is really energy in
right.
the sense, you know, so whatever you can do to move it, whether it's talking, writing, dancing, physical exercise, you know, you just have to find the thing, I think, that works best for you. And music was that thing for me and always has been that thing for me, you know.
And yoga too, right?
And
Did
yoga
you start yoga
as well.
Pretty young? How old were you?
Yeah, I was in ninth grade.
Wow.
That was
a ahead
big
of the curve.
Thing.
Like, what year was
well,
that?
Well, that was a big thing because that was in 2000 and... one.
Yeah, that's about when I started.
Yeah.
And I blame Madonna. It's like,
so do I. No, I'm sorry.
It's like when she had that line in her song that said, I do yoga and Pilates and the room is full of hotties and you know I'm satisfied. I was like, yeah, that's me. I want to do that.
She said
so
that?
So I think that was a line in a song.
Wow. Yeah, that was not the way I got into yoga, but that was a big
so
thing
learned.
On South Carolina, though.
Yoga?
Especially at that time. Yeah, because I had heard about it, and then I had a friend who was like going regularly to like the only spot on the island that was teaching yoga.
I mean, it just wasn't very popular back then.
No, and I was kind of nervous, and I asked him to take me the first time, and
what'd you wear?
What did I wear? God, I don't know. Just
like, how do you know what to wear for your
like
first yoga
shorts?
Class?
I don't
board
know.
Board shorts.
Yeah,
that stretch not much.
But I do remember I got in the car. After it was done, and I was just like, Mom, my mom picked me up, and I was like, this is something. Like, this
did
is
you tell her to go too?
Me. No, she like hates yoga. She's like so fit, but she like doesn't like stretching
yeah.
or anything. She just likes
oh,
to like,
she just gets to be
yeah,
fit. She's
yeah.
one of those.
She is.
She's a unicorn.
Totally. Yeah.
So
she's good at like every like physical activity. But yeah, that was a huge thing in South Carolina that also kind of helped open. I guess, or help me move my energy, you know, physically in a way. Because I was moving it with music more in a emotional or, you know, spiritual way. But
yeah.
with it's also to move it out of your body.
What did you feel? How did you...
When I did yoga?
Yeah. yeah
I
like,
just felt like?
Like,
honestly, I felt like at that time, you know, ninth grade, you know, you're starting to get into like... experimenting with substances and stuff, you know, and I was like smoking a lot of weed at that point. And I remember like I got in the car, I was like, I don't need weed, you know, I don't need that stuff. Like this is I can access, you know, this place within me without any external.
You're so ahead of the curve.
Stimuli.
Yoga, marijuana, all that stuff is everywhere now.
We can edit that part, right?
No, that's all. I've tried it too.
Okay.
I'm not, for me, I just want to go to sleep.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. I can't do it anymore. But I remember at that time just being like, this is, whoa, I accessed something within myself. I didn't know I could.
So you had like a body high.
Yeah, almost. Absolutely. Like Shavasana, where like a sense of just
yeah.
total relaxation, or just kind of everything got still and quiet.
Shavasana's never long enough.
Never.
Is it? It's never long enough.
Never.
Do you, so how often do you do yoga now? Is it like a...
Oh, like at least like 3-4 times a week.
Yeah. Do you practice by yourself or do you go somewhere?
When we're home in Boulder, we usually go to Core Power.
Cool.
Because I like the heat. Because I like the
cute.
Sweat.
Okay.
But my favorite form to practice is like the traditional, like Shivananda yoga style, which is very, very traditional and...
Is it towards,
it's
I don't know, is it like a...
It's more of like a, I mean, I guess you could say yin in a way.
Oh, okay.
Because right, it's, so it's very, a longer, very,
slower.
It's very slow, but you're kind of, there's like 12 traditional postures that are designed to like work the spine from your head all the way down to the base. And you kind of hold those for a while, and but you start with the traditional sun salutations, and but it's very different. It's, you know, you're kind of laying in shavasana almost after every pose, and it's very slow and very meditative, and I feel like that's always the best one for me.
What's it called again?
Well, the name of the teacher was Swami Shivananda. He was a very famous saint of India, and they kind of adapted a sequence that was based off of his kind of direction.
Is it practiced in the States?
Oh, yeah, there's all over the place. They have a center here in New York. Yeah. They have an awesome yoga ranch where my wife did her teacher training up in the Catskills.
I almost did a teacher training in August, but it didn't work out, but I would love to do that.
Yeah. So they're all over the world.
Yeah.
Shivananda yoga.
So, you know, a big part of yoga is like, I feel like you get introduced to a meditation practice, and you know, that's why I'm saying like Shavasana is never long enough, because you lay there and you're like, I'm just doing my checklist in my head. I'm like, so I have to do this or God, that class and this guy smells. And, but I feel like it's hard for me to get anywhere good in the 5 minutes that you're laying there.
Right.
So, but I personally, I really love meditation. I don't do it nearly enough.
Right.
Sometimes I'll be good and it'll be a few days in a row, and then it'll be a couple of weeks before I do it again. And it's, but it's always one of those things that I'm like, yoga and meditation are two things that I go, why don't I do this more often?
Right.
But my Aries sides of me,
it's physical,
tell me go, go, go.
Yeah,
and you're moving too slow.
Right.
Which is why, of course, the astrologer always tells me to slow down. And sometimes I listen.
Right.
But I really enjoy it. And for me, meditation is one of those things where I energetically reset to a slower place, to a more patient place, to a more open place. And I get messages sometimes. I mean, it's not every time, but sometimes I'm hearing like a repeated phrase like that's meaningful to me, or I might I might sort of start to see visions like of certain images. Even been able to do telepathy, which is really interesting.
Right.
But meditation is great. Do you have a practice of that?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, every day.
Every day.
Every day.
You're my guru then.
Don't say that. Yeah, it's kind of like a non-negotiable for
me. Really?
Yeah. Because if I don't, I just feel it, you know, all day that I'm off or something.
What does that mean? You feel it? What's the off like for you?
It's just, what's the off like? I didn't have that. It's like almost like I didn't set the intention, you know. I didn't set the intention. I didn't create the space for me to fully give myself or be myself or get in that thing. And also, like, I didn't like cleanse myself, you know, from my sleep or the previous day or all that stuff, you know. So for me, it's just something that I need to do every single day.
How long do you do it for?
Know? It depends. Like when I'm on the road, it's a lot harder, you know?
Yeah.
So it's only like maybe like 20 minutes or so. But when I'm home, I really try to like get in like a solid hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'm not like, you know, sitting for the whole hour, like levitating. I'm definitely like,
just half
just
of it.
Like, yeah, just the 30 minutes. No. But, even if I have like a sit where I'm not, where I don't feel like I like attained any like whatever calm.
Yeah.
It still affects my day in such a positive way.
I think that's what discourages me almost from doing it is I literally think to myself, I can't get where I need to go where I've been before in 10 minutes or 5 minutes. So I'm just not going to do it at all.
Right.
But like you said, even if you don't get somewhere, just breathing, just stopping, setting an intention, changing your perspective, being grateful is already changing you. Absolutely. I mean, you can change yourself with one deep breath, so why the hell am I so stubborn?
Right,
because I'm an Aries.
Because you're an Aries.
Because
you're an Aries. You're just...
Does Emery have that same, your wife?
Absolutely,
Emery, does she...
Yeah. She's, I think, more consistent than I am.
Really?
Yeah, she just...
What's more consistent than every day?
Well, I mean, some days I'm like, I wake up late and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna like light some incense and like sit for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, where she's a little more...
Like intentional time.
She's a little more like just, you know... Yeah.
So is it a morning thing?
Yeah, it's definitely a morning thing for me.
Everybody has probably their time where it's like before I go to bed or in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, I generally like to at least do, you know, they always say to sit morning and evening, you know, but in the evening it's just a little too, it's not practical for me because I'm on tour and that's when things kind of start get going.
Well, it's pretty tough to, you're like, I'm meditating for an hour. I know that there's meant to be a concert going on. I think I'm important, but so's my practice.
Yeah.
That would be tough.
Yeah.
I mean, how does the travel, I mean, do you love the travel?
I do love the travel. I mean, I've been traveling since I was like 16 years old. That's when I went on my first tour, you know? So, I think traveling just, it kind of makes me feel free, and I like to like change up, you know, the pattern, I guess. It kind of, I think it helps me like not get stuck in a pattern, but I think when you travel, it really forces you to surrender, and that's my biggest thing that I think I take from the road, because... you know, you just truly have to, like, as cliche as it sounds, like, just go with the flow. And whenever I try to, like, make any kind of, like, things in my head, like, oh, I'm going to do this every day, or I'm going to, like, you know, make sure I, like, go here when I get to that place, or I get there, like, usually, like, 90% of the
time. Do you not like to plan?
I do like to have like a general idea, like, but it's, I can't plan. I mean, you can plan as best as you can, but like, you're always going to be, if you're so attached to your schedule, you're just going to be disappointed if you're traveling, because you have to just truly be in a flow, because anything can happen, you know? And that's kind of the thing that I think the road has taught me so much about. And, it's also created such a family. You know, like anywhere I go, whatever city I go in, I know people, and that's all because of traveling and music. And and you also see that, you know, everybody is really the same, no matter where you go. I mean, if you're in Philadelphia or if you're in Delhi,
right?
You know, everybody is the same. Everybody is trying to survive. Everybody's trying to be happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's all these different lines that we draw between people that are really lines that we draw. But when you take away those lines, everybody's just trying to,
I mean,
get on.
I agree. Lives,
you know?
The travel I've done, I'm like, everybody's kind.
Yeah.
Everybody wants joy and happiness and peace. And there's just a few bad apples here and there. And I don't know where they are, but who's the they, right? Because I'm not really drawing a line, I feel like, because when I go there, I'm like, oh, you're wonderful. Or, you know, meet these other people from other cultures or other countries, or, you know, all the things that are meant to divide us. I'm like, I don't really get it. So like, who's drawing those lines though?
Yeah. I mean, it's been in place for thousands of years. I think that's a tough question to answer, you know?
Yeah. But we need them gone.
Yeah.
The people it's, drawing,
you know, but
lines.
No matter how many lines are there, you know, there are those universal, there is that universal language that no line can ever come between. And that is the language of the heart. I mean, it, and sound, you know?
Yeah.
Like you can be, you cannot understand this like language or whatever, you know? And, but if you feel it, or in this song, you know, say you're listening to a French song, but if you feel the rhythm and you feel the beat, you feel emotion, you know,
it
doesn't matter, you know? And it's the same thing with love. Like if you're in another country, you don't even know the person or don't even speak their language, but if they do some kind of act or, touch you in some way through giving love, they don't need to say anything to you.
There's some neurological expert talking mm-hmm. about the brain and talking about energy and frequency. And he's like, I think his name is Bruce Lipton. He said this. He's like, the gazelle does not need to check with the lion that it wants to eat it. It just knows. Yeah. Because perfect. Of energy.
It's perfect. Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So you can feel it. And absolutely. So I wonder, so I can totally feel all your love in all the songs then, because right. I would love to know how it works, how you, mm. how a person gravitates towards a certain artist or a certain genre. Mm-hmm. Because like growing up, there's like, I remember one of my best friends like loved Smashing Pumpkins.
Right.
And I just didn't get it. They're
right.
fine.
Right.
They're fine. But I didn't have their, you know, I didn't have mm-hmm. their albums. I didn't put them on my playlist. Like, but they're fine. I mean, I gravitated towards other kinds of music and I loved it.
Right.
She, you know, she couldn't figure that out either.
Right.
So it came to me long, long time ago. I'm like, there must be an energy or a frequency or what I thought was, there must be some vibration frequency within a song mm. that resonates with you.
Right.
That was my like...
Right.
thought, but yeah. you probably have a better explanation that's put a lot more out.
No, I mean, I can't really explain it, and I don't think a lot of people can explain it, and I kind of don't like to explain it.
Mm.
You know, that's one of the greatest, that's one of the reasons I love music so much, is because my mind stops. You know, everywhere else I'm just thinking so much, but when I'm playing music and I'm listening to music mm. and I'm feeling a connection, I don't need to reason about it. I don't need to, like, you know, one of my favorite analogies from this great saint in India said, you know, you've come to this mango grove to taste the sweetness of the mangoes, right? Why do you need to know how many trees or count how many leaves are on each tree? That's not going to give you the sweetness. You just need to eat the mango. Right, it's like if you go to a tavern, mm-hmm. right? One bottle of Danica Patrick's wine is going to make you drunk, right? You don't need to
definitely.
Know. You don't need to know about how many different wines are in the cellar
right.
to be drunk. You just need. So with music, it's that thing where I don't need to know how it works. I don't care because it's going into my heart and I feel it. You
mm-hmm.
know, I don't care. I don't need to know. You know, and I think that's one of the. In my opinion, one of the problems I think with like Western culture, especially here in the West, is because we're so obsessed with explaining things.
We want an answer for everything.
We want an answer for everything.
Absolutely.
And the things that we can't explain, we push away because they scare us, because
true.
We can't control them.
Because yeah.
we feel like when we can explain things, oh, we have a sense of control over this thing. We understand this thing. We understand how it works, right?
Well said.
But the things that we can't understand, we ignore. And I just think it's a shame because those are the things that really can affect us the deepest, I think, affect our hearts the deepest, mm-hmm. You know, we try to explain love so much or like this and that, but like the true essence of love, I mean, how can you put that in words? You can't. You know, it's just...
Reminds me of the movie Contact with Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey.
I know that, right?
Contact.
I'm a huge movie buff.
Are you? Okay,
yeah.
Great. Well, this one's an old one.
And I know this one.
And it's about Jodie Foster grows up and wants a telescope. Her dad gets her one.
Right.
Her dad
dies
when she's out looking at her telescope. She's very affected by it. She kind of like emotionally disconnected and became more scientific. And she wants to make connection with anything, any life form out there. She's trying to make contact.
Right.
So gets a frequency, follows it, has a code. Then they build this device to be that the code gave them was like
right.
a schematics.
Right.
So they build it and it's this trillion, multi-trillion dollar investment. It's a worldwide thing happening. And so they have like a panel of people, you know, weighing in on it. And then they need to figure out who's going to be the one to go into this device and go somewhere.
Right.
They don't even know what's going to happen.
Right.
They might die. And Matthew McConaughey is... is religious. I'm going to guess he's Christian or something. And so he comes in as sort of like the religious arm of the group to choose who's going to go in this ball and transcend somewhere or nowhere or die. And so she bases everything she does on science, and he's all, you know, heart and spirit. Right. And so fast forward to the end of the movie, and she's being slowly convinced to trust spirit, trust feeling, and not so much the science, because he asks her, he says, "Let me ask you a question. Did you love your dad?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "Of course." And he goes, "Prove it."
Right. Exactly.
There's no science to prove it. Exactly. But you sure as hell can feel it.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
But of course, all those things that we don't really, that we can't see and we can't prove, we run away from because we don't understand.
Right.
And I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
You've gone to India many times.
Yeah.
What is it like over there? You've been to ashrams and, you know, tell me about what you've done over there. I'm literally just like, I know you've been to India and I know you've been to ashrams.
I don't know. You know, that's what, like coming from South Carolina. I don't know how I ended up over there. I mean, I don't know. I never thought that that was going to be like the place for me, you know, but it was.
And it's a yearly thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I used to go every year kind of like, no pun intended, religiously. But then, I got kind of busy, and maybe every couple of years now.
Yeah.
But it just was a place that, like, it hit me. And the culture hit me, and the way of their spirituality hit me. And I felt, like, a deep connection, like, there that I could not put forth, you know, in words. I couldn't explain
it. Prove it. Can't.
Yeah, I can't. And it just felt like home. And I think to go over there at such a young age, you know, the first time I went over there was I was 20, you know, and having so many experiences and having so many connections, you know, that kind of naturally came forth. I just feel like, I don't know if it was like past life stuff or like whatever, but that's my place. And it just, when I started going over there, greatly, greatly affected my music and my whole way of living and being and everything, you know. But it's just a place where it is soaked in spirituality. It is soaked in spirituality. And, you know, a good friend of mine, I asked him, you know, what's like the difference, you know, between like America and like India or whatever, you know. And he said, you know, in America, it's really, really hard to remember that there is a higher power because we're just surrounded by
stimulation.
And he said, in India, it's really hard to forget that there's a higher power.
That's
because
really
it's
cool.
Always in your face. I mean, you know, there could be a mall, and right next to the mall is a roadside shrine, you know, or something. Or you're walking down the street and there's businessmen, and then there's babas and yogis walking right next to them. You know, it's just all the lines disappear, you know, talking about lines. It's just kind of a huge melting pot. And there was a pulse. There was this, you know, kind of rhythm of life that when you're there, you just feel like you're a part of it.
I wonder if they kind of resonate in a different, like there's the sleep states and there's awake and sleep states. Right. It's like beta, alpha, delta, theta.
Wow.
And so like beta is where we're in beta right now.
Right.
And then the next step down, which is alpha, that's kind of a very productive space for spirituality.
Right.
I think then, delta is sleep state.
Uh-huh.
Theta is like the deep sleep. I could be getting some of that wrong, but from my memory, that's what it is. But alpha is very, like, that's when you meditate, mm-hmm. when you slow down.
Right.
So I wonder if they, but so the higher vibration is a lower frequency. That makes sense. Like the, because mm-hmm. theta is like
right.
But the beta is much faster. Right. So alpha is slowing it down. So you talk about the wave. Like, I wonder if they like resonate in this alpha wave vibration instead of this beta wave that's very like. You know, there's a it feels frantic.
Right. I don't know what wave they resonate in.
They have their own wave in India.
It's so intense.
It's called India.
It's so intense. You know, it's not always like super peaceful, you know, obviously, because there's so many people there and everything. But there is a, there's that rhythm, it's just like, how is it all going? You know, how is it all happening? But, yeah, I think it was just for me, it was just I really took to the spirituality and the practice and stuff. And
so do you, are you someone that believes there's spirituality and then religious? Like, you're either religious or spiritual?
Like, well, I think like the word religion kind of like makes me a little like, you know,
up.
A little tight. I don't know if it's just from like growing up in the West or whatever, but, you know, my whole like relationship with India was born from a saint, you know, that came from India, and I fell in love with that saint.
Why?
Again, it was just
a calling.
Feeling. No, it was just a familiar feeling. Like mm-hmm.
How did you get introduced from a saint from India?
Well, so when I left South Carolina, I went to a boarding school in California. In Idlewild, which is a couple hours east of LA. It's a small little mountain town. Mm-hmm. And I went there for 10th, 11th, 12th grade. That's when I started to kind of get serious with music. And I became best friends with a kid named Sam Marcus. And he was a rapper. And I was a musician. So we formed this band. We called ourselves The Villagers.
Oh,
right.
So you call your group The Villagers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
your fans.
He said one night, why don't you come and spend the night in my dorm so we can like make music all night in my dorm, because we live in separate dorms. So that night I went into his dorm room. I was in 10th grade, and there was a picture on the wall of this saint. Neem Karoli Baba was his name. And I remember when I saw the picture, I was like, oh my God, like, what the heck? Like,
wow.
I know. Like, it was electric.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Like,
creepy.
Almost.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
Whoa, why am I so connected to this photo of this man?
Exactly. And I said, Sam, you know, who is that? And he said, oh, it's this saint named Karoli Baba. My dad and my brothers were with him in India in the 70s, right? So I was like, well, what's a saint? Like, I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Saint Teresa, Saint Francis of Assisi.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. So he pulled out this book called Miracle of Love, which is a book of all these different stories about this saint.
Mm.
And I remember I stayed up the whole night. I didn't go to sleep that night. And I just read, and I was like, this is it. And I fell in love with this being, and I didn't know, and I didn't reason about it. It wasn't weird for me. I was just like, oh my God, I'm in love with this person.
The energy.
And
like,
so, you know, when you love somebody, you want to love everything they love, right? So because he was from India, I wanted to love India.
Mm.
Because he, you know, was said to like be like an incarnation of the god Hanuman, it's the monkey god in India.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know about Hanuman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he would read from the Ramayana, which is a holy book of India. I wanted to read the Ramayana. So it all stemmed from my love of him. You know, I wasn't thinking like, oh, Hindu or Buddhist or this or that.
Yeah,
or
it wasn't the religion that drew you.
And I still don't think that way. You know, my spiritual path is based off my heart and my connection with the people that have inspired me. It's an intimate connection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to think of the spirit as like an old bearded man up in the sky,
on
like
a throne.
Damning all of us.
So,
like, I want to think of as, you know, they call it the innermost self, right? Closer than our own breath, you know?
The question that really kind of sent me, there was like the first wave maybe 5 years ago of really getting curious about things
mm-hmm.
in spirituality and meditation and, you know, special places. It kind of actually all started in Sedona.
All in Sedona.
It always starts in Sedona with that damn girl who said, you're a celebrity. And I'm like, oh my God, how do you know this stuff? And I try out, how do you know this stuff?
The psychic of Sedona.
Yep. And it kind of started, it started there with some of that exposure. And then a few years ago, the next level came from starting to question the foundations of very simple things. So the question I started asking everybody is, and everybody, so many people got it wrong. They didn't listen to the first word. What is God? And they answered by who? They're like, well, he's a blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So what that was a real launching question for me into the world of questioning everything, really.
Right.
Because right when you start questioning what is God, that's a pretty big question.
Right.
What is God to you?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Put me on the spot.
Well, talk to him.
Double Aries. Hold on. Let me ask him. Hey, what are you? No.
Oh, what is God to you?
I mean, I would say for myself, I don't know.
That's okay.
I don't know. And even, you know, just drawing from India again, because that's where I've been inspired, you know, they have a name for that God or spirit or whatever called Brahman, which is really undefinable, because they say that that great spirit is beyond our mind, our senses, anything. So how can we explain it in words? So whenever you try to bring it forth in words, it becomes impure.
Too simple.
Right. Yeah.
So they call it
Brahman. It's that the beyond the beyond. But they said if that Brahman were to be described, there's three qualities of that Brahman. They call it Sat Chit Ananda, which means truth, consciousness, bliss. Right. So that's kind of the nature, they would say, of Brahman. That's just the kind of whatever formal answer. But if you're asking me, like, what is God? Like, I mean, like I said, I don't like to think of it as a abstract idea. I like to think of it as the eternal friend, you know, the eternal beloved, the innermost self in the innermost chamber of our heart, like nearer than the nearest thing. You can't even comprehend how close it is to you, like seeing through our eyes and beating through our hearts, like the breath within the breath, you know. That's how I try to, you know, have a relationship, I guess, with that thing called God.
Well, I think that we try and put it into human terms. We're trying to put a label on something. We're trying to draw a picture. We're trying to literally draw a picture. Right. And so many people, you know, they try to describe like, what is God? But I'm like, or who is God? But I'm like, no, what is God? Right. So, you know, cause for me, it's like an omnipresent energy. Mm-hmm. Like it's everywhere and everything.
Absolutely.
And it's a vibration that's accessible.
Right.
Maybe not by everyone and maybe not very often.
Right.
But it's like a frequency for me. It's like the highest vibration possible.
Right.
It's that love frequency, or, you know, those moments where it's like unexplainable.
Absolutely. I'm so tired of explaining things.
I think that I do think it was so great though, how you talked about like not needing to explain, just enjoy the wine, just enjoy the song, just enjoy it.
Right.
Everybody wants a simple answer, or everybody wants an answer. They have an idea of what they want to hear, and they think things to be complicated.
Right.
They almost are angry when things are so simple.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like, just let it go.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
It's just life. That's my saying when things get tough. I'm like, it's just life.
Right.
So speaking of like kind of simple, maybe, is, you know, you came out with your latest album, The Fruitful Darkness.
Right.
Last year? 2018? Yeah, I think it was like the beginning, maybe?
Together. I think last year.
But you kind of, full album. You, instead of like this big production of the album and everything. Right. You like just released a few songs at a time, which, right. man, for someone who puts their heart and soul into every song,
right.
how smart! Like, I mean, because people are going to listen to all of those songs, all three right. or four. I think that's about how you release them, three or four at a time.
Yeah.
And because you want all of them to be heard, not just like title track or just right. like the one that catches
the
on.
Single, yeah.
You're like, let them sit. Because I'm going to tell you, like when I first listened to each grouping of songs, there was some that were like, okay. And then
right.
the more you listen to them, the more they like started resonating with you. And you're like, wow.
Right.
And so that's really cool. I how did you even come up with that way of doing it?
I think there was a few different like elements that came together. I think the first element was like, I was an independent artist,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I could do things however I wanted, you know.
You simplified things.
Yeah, yeah. And I think like the other thing was like, you know, the music business is like everything was changing so rapidly and things are like streaming, like it was,
yeah,
that's how it is now.
Yeah.
Spotify, Apple Music, like
yeah.
I can't remember the last time I bought a physical CD,
right?
You know, so with that, you know, I think a lot of people were kind of, you know, they're able to release what they wanted when they wanted,
yeah.
you know, they didn't need like a big, I guess, build up in a way. But the main thing was I felt like as a culture, especially now, we're so, impatient.
And oh, I wanted the whole damn album.
Yeah, yeah. But
I was like, really? Three songs? Really?
We can't focus that well, you know? Like, so it's like, even if an artist that I love releases a new album and I'm like loving the album, I usually can't make it all the way to the end in like one sitting, and then
right.
those songs kind of get lost. And
yeah.
like, and even as an artist, you know, you release a whole album and you have all these, you know, kids, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like you kind of forget about a few kids, you know, it's, you know, when you're playing, because some kind of take over. And I didn't want that to happen. I wanted each song to really get its proper kind of chance, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to release it for that. And we also want, you know, when you release an album, you know, you pour your heart and soul into an album. It takes a year kind of for the whole process to, between recording and then putting it out, you know, then it's like people talk about it for a couple months and then it's over.
Talked about it all year then.
Yeah. So we were able to kind of like,
that takes some bravery, because you believe that all of those songs,
yeah.
every time you came out with three or four songs,
right.
four times, it was like you did it quarterly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You had to believe that those songs would stand up and be something that would make people want to listen to the next group that you release.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, it's a revolutionary way of doing it. I thought it was really cool in the end. I thought
right.
it was a really smart thing to do. I of course wanted the whole damn album, like
right.
I said, but and more, the special stuff that you've never sung for anyone, that stuff too.
Yeah.
A very thoughtful way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that there might not, maybe every artist couldn't do that though.
Yeah. Well,
do you know what I mean? Like maybe they do artists put fluff in their album?
I mean, it was definitely a risk. You know, I think like most people these days, you know, they just release a single, they release one
right.
song.
What
know?
Does EP stand for?
I don't even know. To be
I'm like, what's
honest.
An EP?
No, to be honest, I think we looked it up. It's like, I don't even know what EP and LP stands for, but EP was always like a 5-song, 6-song type of thing.
Okay.
You know, and then LP is like the full album.
Okay, well, you came out with some mini
anything.
EPs. I don't know.
Anything,
it doesn't even matter, right? Just listen to the damn music.
Yeah, just listen to the music. Jeez.
Gosh. Why does that have to be so complicated,
yes,
everybody?
Yes.
You know, like one more dive on like something sort of serious. It was like, it's called Fruitful Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Your songs have intention. I would imagine your title of your album has intention.
Right.
So what is the story behind not just how you named it, but what was your darkness? Like that's what I'm more curious about.
My darkness. I have a lot of darkness.
Pretend like I'm Barbara Walters,
start.
And I'm like, You know, you're just sharing with the queen, and you know, this
I am sharing with the queen, but
and you're ready to share.
I'm ready to share. I'm not scared of sharing. That with that specific album and that time, mm-hmm. I was going through what they call Saturn return in astrology, mm-hmm. Which is where the planet Saturn comes and returns to its exact position of when you were born. Mm. So it usually happens twice in your life, when you're from anywhere from 28 to 30 and then again from 58 to 60. And it can be a time of like struggle or a time of just great learning and all this stuff, whatever. So my darkness was really knowing who I am, you know.
It's a tough question.
And I think as a double Aries, it's a little easier for you.
Well, it's
still a tough question.
It's very tough, but because there's so much stimulus.
You have more advantage, though, than but well, I think for
I'll take
me...
that, because there is plenty of disadvantages. Just ask anyone I know, anyone that knows me.
But yeah, for me, it was the darkness of not feeling myself or not trusting myself, not trusting who I am or trusting what I like actually believe. Because for somebody like myself who has a lot of water, we would say in astrology, I'm a feeler, you know, and I can, you know, I pick up on a lot of vibes and energies and all that stuff. And if I don't have a strong sense of self, then there's nothing there. There's space within, and those energies can kind of come in and take a hold. And as time goes on, you start to become drowned. And if you don't know how to hold on to yourself, right?
You can protect your energy, exactly, as it would be called.
Exactly.
Yeah, for those who kind of started seeking, you know what that means to protect your energy.
Exactly. You can just drown and lose yourself.
Yeah.
And I've always been obsessed, even since a little boy, with finding out who I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, in India, they call it bichara, which means like self-inquiry. Right. So the yogis, one method of meditation is they sit in meditation and they just ask themselves, who am I? And they ask it over and over again for years and years and years. And the idea is that when you continually ask that question, you're brought into a place of silence, mm-hmm. and the small I falls away and you kind of merge with the supreme I. That's their method. But I remember just, you know, always being obsessed with finding out who I am. Like, I know I'm like, my name is Trevor, but that doesn't really tell me who I am in essence, right?
No,
I know, like, I'm from South Carolina, but who's I, right? When I say I am happy, well, who's the I,
right?
And you ask this over and over again. So it's a question that can't be answered immediately. So it's dark, right? And a lot of us avoid that. A lot of us fill ourselves up with other things or other people's beliefs, or they just don't even want to ask the question, and they just busy their minds with other things.
I feel this is the difference between, look, like, when you start to seek and want truth, and you wake up and you want to know the truth and you're ready to ask those questions, you dive into a lot of darknesses.
Absolutely.
And I think that as a spiritual person, as a seeker of truth, it's so much fucking harder now than it used to be.
Right.
Like, there is so much more struggle.
Absolutely.
There's so much more crying. There's so much more, you know, evaluating the situation, but finally looking at myself going, is this me?
Right.
Because before that, you don't. You blame everyone else, and it's everyone else's problem, and everyone else is doing things to you, and life is happening to you.
Right.
And then when you become, for me, this is my experience, more spiritual you become, to be quite honest, the more difficult it becomes.
Absolutely.
I really believe life is challenging.
Absolutely.
But damn it, it's so rewarding when you come through the other side.
Absolutely.
And so the only way to the other side is through. And mm-hmm. I say that, and I've said that in difficult times in my life, mm-hmm. because you want to avoid it. Like, there's been times where I've said, when things are really difficult, I just want to go to an island for a few months and just like
check out
and just come back and everything is fine and I'm where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
But you have to go through the darkness.
Yeah.
You have
to. It's a warrior's path.
It's,
I mean, we're all checking out.
But look, once the spiritual journey begins, and I know many, many people on it, you probably know many, many people on it.
Right.
You never leave.
Right.
No, once you've begun the journey.
Well, I mean, once you have a higher taste, you're not going to want to eat like fast food anymore, you know, because you know it's there.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I had like, you know, I mean, one really amazing experience I had, it was in Tulum, Mexico. Mm. Have you ever been there?
Powerful spot.
Powerful spot. Yeah. So I went with my girlfriend who's coming to the concert.
Oh, nice.
And she and I were there for a week, and we had, it was probably, I think it was day four, and we went and did a 3.5 hour yoga class, mm-hmm. and then we had a chakra balancing massage afterwards that we were really late for, so we were hurrying. Yeah. I'm starving because I have to eat every 3 hours,
right.
So we ride back uptown to Raw Love and go get our smoothie bowl that I had my heart set on because I'm an Aries and things have to go the way I want them to go. And so I get there and have the smoothie bowl, and, you know, my friend Stacy is like buzzing. She is like vibrating and annoying. And I'm like, why are you so happy? Like, I'm angry at her happy.
Right.
And she's just like, so she's just in this space. So we ride back down to the hotel and I'm like, I'm going to go find a spot on the beach. There's a little sun left probably. And she was on the phone with her husband. So I'm like, you know, I'll meet you down there. I'll be over on the right-hand side.
Right.
I get down there. There's no sun. And then I kind of move over and there's still no sun. I end up back at the original bed that we've been laying on all week. And there's been this dog all week that I've said, I think I'm this dog. I named the dog on the first day. And the dog was magical in that anytime I sought this dog out, it was never there. But if I let go and didn't care, but truly didn't care, like, I'm okay.
Right.
All of a sudden it'd show up.
Right.
It was this super weird energetic dog that I named Lucy.
Right.
And so I go to this spot and all of a sudden dog jumps up and I start bawling.
Wow.
And I have this experience I skipped the part that was really important before the bawling. I transported somewhere else for I don't know how long. 15 seconds maybe.
Right.
But I got this connection with what to me felt like more of that higher frequency, that love, that God vibration,
right.
whatever it is, where I had this connection to information that was, you are loved, you are always loved, no matter what, I love you, no matter how far you go, I'm always here, it's all there is. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I just lost it for like an hour. And she came down and she was like, I had just gotten my shit together and I'm laying on this bed. And then she comes over and I'm like, and she goes, what, is everything okay? I'm like, I'm okay, everything's okay. It's just, it was Lucy, it was the dog. And then and she's like, oh, and she holds space like nobody else. Like she holds space for you energetically to feel what you're feeling with no judgment.
Right.
And so I just lost it. But it was like, I've been starting to be able to get these glimpses into this other world, other realm, other dimensions that for me only come when you are, you know, sort of on this spiritual journey. Mm-hmm. You have these, or maybe it helps me recognize them.
Right.
But it was like one of those experiences that I was like, you can never leave this path.
Right.
Like you can't, because if you don't follow your intuition, you don't feel those things. Why would I mean, how does a dog facilitate that to happen other than feeling your intuition and feeling spirit, feeling
Absolutely.
Energy? So anyway, I just felt like I had to tell that story, but it was like,
no,
it was
it. I mean,
very powerful.
Yeah. Once you have that higher taste, it's.
Have you ever had sort of, I don't even know what you call that.
Too many.
That's no fair.
Too
I had one.
Too many. I'll
That's
tell
fantastic.
One of my favorite stories I'll tell where I, I was about to go to India and, before that, growing up with my dad, my whole dad's side is from the Midwest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, we used to have all this St. Louis Cardinals memorabilia around our house because for a time they lived in St. Louis and it was just a nostalgic thing, you know? We had all the jerseys everywhere, you know? And my grandparents moved down to Florida in their old age, and we would always go down there in the spring, and my grandfather, Papa, my dad, and me would always go to spring training because the Cardinals would train down there, right? So it was just a connection, right, to my dad, to my grandfather, the whole thing. So my grandfather passes away, and I had this urge to do this ceremony. In India, they call it Shraddha, which means you feed your ancestors through like a ritual. And where our ashram is in India is a real special place to do this ceremony. So I had kind of built this whole thing up and contacted some monks that I know, and they found the
priest. Yeah, because, you know, priest, I just called up my monk friends.
The whole thing, right? The whole thing. And we get there, and I had to do a lot of stuff for this. I had to, like, find the names of my grandparents going back three generations.
Wow.
Because you have to, like, name it during the ceremony.
Okay.
But I had built all this up in my head. Like, I was like, I'm going to do this ceremony in India, and I'm gonna see them come in front of me, and they're gonna bless me, and there's gonna be rainbows. And, you know, you kind of like build it up, you know.
Of course. Like,
and I built it up for a long time because I had prepared for it, whatever.
Yeah.
So the day comes, right? We get there
in India.
We're in India, and we're in this place called Allahabad, which is where our ashram is, which is really off the tourist track. There's like no, like, it's India, like.
That's serious.
Yeah, they're like,
having
definitely
been there,
like the only like white folk there, like especially like a tall white blonde kid, like definitely stick out, you know. And the day before the ceremony, we went to the priest's house to meet him, to kind of talk about the ceremony and all that stuff. And he's kind of a wild guy, whatever. But he said, okay, tomorrow I'll come to the ashram at 6 a.m. and we'll walk to the meeting of the rivers and we'll do the ceremony. So long story short, the next morning, we wake up and I'm all amped. 6 a.m. comes around. He doesn't come. 6:15. He's not there. 6:30. So I'm like, he forgot, you know, like, so I'm kind of pissed, you know,
you've
like
been building this up forever.
Exactly.
You're ready.
Planning this out. This is a
it's
big
about
deal.
Me.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. This is a big deal. So we get a knock on the door at like 7 a.m. And of course he's like, right on time, you know, and we're like, no, you're an hour late. Like, so I was already kind of upset.
Sure.
Right? Didn't start the whole thing right.
Sure.
So I got a little pouty, whatever. And we're walking.
I've never been there, yeah, I swear.
We're walking to the rivers, and we get in the boat, and you do the ceremony out where the rivers meet, right? So we get out to where the rivers meet, and we start the ceremony. But the priest, you know, he does this every day. This is his job. He's out there every day on the boat. People come out there to pay him to do so. So he's doing this. He's saying these mantras so fast. And I just feel like he doesn't care about this.
It's a little robotic.
I'm trying
You're like,
to,
where's
like,
the soul?
Focus and, you know, everything. Mm-hmm. And in the ceremony, he's asking me to repeat the mantras right back. That's how. And but he's going so fast that I can't repeat the mantras. And at some point, he just doesn't wait for me and he just keeps going. So I'm getting more
like,
and more.
Like, it's not going to work.
Exactly. I'm getting more and more pissed off. And I feel nothing. I don't feel any, like,
you're not connected.
La, la,
yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah,
like,
you're not floating yet.
I don't feel
yet.
My grandparents. I don't feel my, like, nothing. I felt nada, zero. And the ceremony gets done. And I'm like, it didn't work. That sucks. Like, this is real shitty. I, like,
I flew halfway around the world.
The whole thing. Like, I was so mad, Danica. I was so mad. We get back in the boat. We get back to the shore. And we're walking back to the ashram with these two monks. And I'm just pissed. I'm just, like, in this such a mood. And before we get into the ashram, we stop at this chai stand where we take tea, right? And we sit in the chai stall. And I'm so upset that I can't even be around anybody. And I just say, hey, like, I need to get some air. So I, like, walk to the corner, right? And there's this little temple on the corner. But it's busy. It's, you know, cows and the rickshaws and cars and dust and the whole thing. And I'm standing on this corner and I start to, like, get a little emotional because I'm like, it didn't work. Like, I came all this way. It didn't work. Like, this just sucks,
yeah.
You know? And at that moment, a rickshaw pulls up right in front of me, like where you are, like, and it stops, and there's like a family of like five or six people in, you know, this Indian family, and they're getting out of the rickshaw, and this kid gets out of the rickshaw right in front of me, and he has a St. Louis Cardinals t-shirt on.
Oh, wow.
And I was
going to say, your grandfather got off?
No, basically. Yeah, and I was just...
And it was a huge sign. You're like...
Yeah, he doesn't know the St. Louis... I mean, how would that...
No. Like, no one has that. You're in the middle of nowhere,
crying.
India.
I was like, oh, wow. My God, it worked, you know? But there's those moments where...
Did you have, like a big wave come over you when you saw him?
I just knew right there.
Your heart knew it all.
It worked. And those are those experiences, yeah. You know, where you have a taste that something's looking up after you, yeah. Or something's guiding you or whatever it is, or you get a visitation from, yeah, something.
Once you get that,
you can't go back. You have to keep walking on the path.
Yeah.
You got to keep walking.
Yeah, although I actually kind of know that if I seek it, I won't get it. So that's pretty tough, though, because I really seek that feeling again. Like, that's like a really...
It always comes when you least expect it.
And it was that day, for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. That's the thing I think I feel about in yoga is the difference between trying harder. Like, it's an effort, right? Spirituality is an effort.
Right.
It's an effort to face your fears. It's an effort to face the darkness.
Right.
It's an effort to change your practices, whatever they may be, that put you into a good or bad state.
Right.
Your thoughts.
Right.
It's difficult, but yet there's also this other side, and so you have to try. There's this other side where when you finally just kind of let go of control, let go of your plans,
absolutely,
let go of things, all of a sudden the puzzle starts fitting together,
right,
perfect,
right,
and you're like, why do I make this so hard?
Yeah.
So that's, to me, like the yoga analogy is like the difference between like trying, come on, you got to go. And then as soon as you, and then you're like, oh my God, there's my foot. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, my feet touched my head.
I saw that on
Instagram.
Oh my God.
I've dreamt about that.
My dad didn't comment on that. I saw that.
Oh my God. Okay. So I do want to cover one more thing before I ask you to jam out.
Yeah.
And this is because, like, being in a relationship where you're with someone spiritual, mm-hmm, it's somewhat more complicated, mm-hmm, and somewhat easier. Mm-hmm. So both being spiritual people, like...
Me and my wife.
Tell me, like, yes, you and Emery. Mm-hmm. Like, how does it look? Like, how does an argument look with two spiritual people?
It looks pretty awful. we definitely have our fair share of arguments. I think it gives you the highest of the highs, and it also gives you like the lowest of the lows. It gives you the full picture, because I feel like when you are doubting everything, and you're just like,
yeah,
this is so freaking hard, I don't know if I can do this. You have that connection that is beyond physical, beyond
anything.
It is that divine, link. You just know.
Yeah.
And you can doubt us all. You can doubt all you want, bro.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. It's not going away, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for both of us to have that space to call on and to remember, really, is like the healing balm, like the greatest healing when we are in a tough spot.
You know,
is to just kind of, you know, we're being held by something greater than each other.
Yeah.
And we just have to let go and give it to that, you know. On the other hand, right, when you're walking a spiritual path, you're doing work on yourself, and a lot of shit comes up. You know,
I don't know what you mean.
All the time, right? Yeah, you know. So, you know, it's easier when
it usually comes out all over them,
exactly,
and you're like, I'm so projecting right now. I'm sorry. Yeah, like, I'm trying to heal an old wound.
Or you don't even say that. And you're just like, why are you?
Well, that's the first thing that happens. You don't say it. You just project.
Yeah.
And then you look at yourself and go, shit.
Yes. And the joke's on you. So I think that you know, it's obviously easier to do that by yourself because you don't have to, like,
right.
But when you're around somebody, it's hard, you know, because yeah, it does come up on them, or they bring out,
yeah.
you know, certain things in yourself that you need to hear or heal.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. They're a teacher.
You know, in astrology, Saturn, the planet of life lessons, is exalted in Libra, which is the sign of relationship, because what's a greater teacher than relationship?
Yeah.
You know, it yeah. is, no matter what happens. So
yeah.
Those are the, I think, pluses and minuses, you know. But, you know, Emery and I, we got married very young too, which was quite interesting because we were both still kind of finding out who each other were as individuals,
yeah.
you know, but then we also yeah. had this relationship and we're trying to figure out how to, like, be married at a young age.
Well, yeah, people are changing so much then.
Which was so hard.
Yeah.
But it was also so rewarding because we saw each other through some of the most difficult times of our lives.
Well, in a relationship, I feel like you're either growing together, which is what
right.
the goal, that's what you need, or you're growing apart,
right.
or one's growing and one's not. To right. me, that's like my generalized yeah. View of relationships. And yeah. so, you know, you're growing together when you're only about, you know, how old were you guys? Early 20s?
Yeah.
A lot of growing to do.
Yeah, I was 26.
It's a lot of time to stay on the same page. That's a lot of time to stay connected. That's yeah. a lot of time to
absolutely
to grow. That you're like hoping it's in the same direction you
yeah.
want it, but
yeah.
it can be challenging. So I think this is a perfect way to kind of lead into one of the songs. Thanks everybody for listening to the Pretty Intense podcast today. I hope you enjoyed it. And also thank you so much, Trevor Hall, for the awesome music. If you like what you heard today and you want to hear more, please click on the subscribe button.